Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And the Fresh from Florida program, supporting Florida's economy by promoting agricultural products grown right here at home, including a variety of seafood harvested by commercial fishermen along Florida's Gulf Coast. On the web at freshfromflorida.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee and other Florida public radio stations. From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Directors of rape crisis centers around Florida say they're in so much need that they are shocked at Governor Rick Scott's veto against funding their services.
For more than half of the programs have waiting lists for services because they're understaffed and the demand is greater than their capacity to meet it.
The governor says he plans to appeal a federal judge's ruling that blocks his executive order to drug test state employees.
If state employees are being funded by taxpayers, these taxpayers should know that they're getting service from people who aren't using drugs.
As the state rolls out new lottery vending machines, just how much revenue will make it to Florida's classrooms? I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Last week, we told you how the Florida Supreme Court was reviewing the Senate's second try at new voting district maps after ruling the first attempt unconstitutional. Today, the court has signed off on the Senate's second attempt at drawing those maps. But that doesn't mean the justices were completely satisfied with the approach taken by legislative leaders. Justice E.C. Perry criticized the splitting of an historically black community in Daytona Beach. Justice Barbara Pariente raised concerns about the time frame the court was given for review. Still, the justices cleared the maps to the disappointment of the Florida Democratic Party. David Bergstein is party spokesman.
Today's ruling raises some serious concerns. We will continue our efforts to hold this Republican-led legislature accountable to the will of the people.
The Democrats, along with the Florida League of Women Voters, the NAACP, and the Council of La Raza, mounted a legal challenge to the Senate's new maps, but lost. Under the Senate's revised plan, there could be 19 Democratic seats and 21 Republican seats. When Governor Rick Scott signed Florida's budget last week, it was after making almost $143 million in line item vetoes. One of those vetoes, valued at $1.5 million, would have gone to rape crisis centers throughout the state. As Jessica Palumbo of member station WJCT in Jacksonville reports, the veto came as a shock to centers with already overworked staff.
Every time someone is sexually assaulted in Florida, state law requires that person to be notified of the services available from one of 30 rape crisis centers. Shirley Webb is executive director of one of them, the Women's Center of Jacksonville. She says, often after police begin their investigation, a rape crisis advocate gets involved.
To be able to explain the options to the victim and what's going to happen next and to be there with them, in terms of anything they need, in terms of referrals, in terms of hand-holding, anything that they need.
And Webb says the relationship doesn't end there. Advocates accompany survivors to meet with investigators and to appear in court.
And there's a lot of recovery that goes on over the next 6 to 8 months to a year. And the advocate is their one person that is their constant.
The Jacksonville Center serves three counties and has a full-time staff of three advocates who struggle to cover a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week schedule. Money for all the state's rape crisis centers is allotted by the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence. Head of the council, Jennifer Dritt, says because of a tight budget, some survivors of rape end up sitting on waiting lists for months before meeting with counselors.
At least half or more than half of the programs have waiting lists for services because they're understaffed. And the demand is greater than their capacity to meet it.
That's why Dritt was looking forward to receiving the $1.5 million in state funding that had made it through the budget process and onto Governor Scott's desk.
It would have allowed programs that are responsible for covering 6 or 7 counties to hire more staff and have full-time presence and take people off the waiting list immediately. So people who might have had to wait another 3 months could have come off the list and be seen right away.
Then last week, a colleague broke the news of the governor's veto to her.
And I said, "You're kidding." You've got to be kidding me.
She thought she had made a convincing case to the legislature.
And I have to think, didn't have accurate information about the need and about how that money would have addressed the need.
Since 2003, Florida's rape crisis centers have been funded mostly by $150 fines collected from convicted violent criminals. But Dritt says that pool of money has depleted because of haphazard collection.
Very often they're not assessing the fine. And then even if they assess the fine, some counties or circuits don't have a good mechanism for collecting it. And if people don't have the money, they don't have the money.
This week, Governor Scott said he vetoed the money because he saw it as a duplication of funds.
We've increased funding for domestic violence. We have money that goes into the rape crisis centers already. So it was additional money that we'd already funded.
But Dritt says domestic violence victims are most times not the same victims that rape crisis centers help.
Most sexual assault is committed by somebody the victim knows, but not necessarily an intimate partner.
In about two-thirds of sexual violence incidents in Florida, the aggressor is not an intimate partner, according to the most recent Centers for Disease Control survey. And for these victims, support comes from rape crisis centers. Judy Wilson directs the center in Central Florida's Marion County. She says she'd hoped the money would have helped establish outreach centers in rural areas.
And if you can get into those areas and be a presence there, then more people will report and more people will get help because rape more or less shatters your life.
In response to the veto, the Rape Crisis Center in Tampa has issued a plea for the governor to visit its facility and talk about its needs. I'm Jessica Palumbo for Florida Public Radio.
Although the $1.5 million did not go to rape crisis centers, today Governor Scott signed new legislation into law that will put that exact amount of money toward relocating victims of sexual batteries. Among other things, the new law also increases requirements for reporting suspected child abuse and make it easier for victims of stalking to get injunctions for protection. Florida officials say they're working to tackle drug abuse, but they're going about it in several different ways. As Sasha Cordner reports, Attorney General Pam Bondi is renewing the focus on prescription drug abuse and its effects on babies. And Governor Rick Scott is continuing his effort to drug test thousands of state workers, despite a recent ruling against that plan by a federal judge.
Governor Rick Scott says he's planning to continue the fight to let state agencies randomly drug test about 85,000 state employees, even after a federal judge in Miami declared the governor's executive order to be unconstitutional. In her 37-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Ursula Ngaro said suspicionless random drug testing violates state workers' Fourth Amendment rights.
The Fourth Amendment protects people from unreasonable searches by the government. It's an unconstitutional search when the government seeks to collect and inspect a person's bodily fluids without any reasonable suspicion that they've done something wrong.
Shalini Goel Agarwal is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, which challenged Scott's executive order last year along with AFSCME, or the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Agarwal says both unions are happy with the judge's ruling.
Her decision will protect the privacy rights of tens of thousands of state employees who otherwise would have been drug tested for no reason whatsoever.
But the governor's spokesman, Lane Wright, says one reason the governor wants to appeal the decision is because the state owes it to the taxpayers to drug test employees.
The taxpayers overwhelmingly support it, by the way, and it makes sense that if state employees are being funded by taxpayers, these taxpayers should know that they're getting a service from people who aren't using drugs, that they're getting a safe and efficient and productive workforce.
Several critics have come out against the appeal, including a few Democratic lawmakers who say the process should stop with the federal court judge. And Paul Brewer, a state employee who works at a print shop, agrees. He says it's time to stop wasting taxpayer dollars.
I would hope that he wouldn't continue with this because not only do I work for the state, but I'm also a taxpayer, and I hate to see my taxpaying money being wasted on a lost cause. The federal government has ruled on this, and I think that's enough.
Scott is expected to appeal to the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The judge's ruling could affect a new state law that would permit random state worker drug testing starting in July. And in a separate but related move, the state's battle against drug abuse found its way from the courtroom to the boardroom. Attorney General Pam Bondi is looking into the scope of the problem surrounding drug-addicted babies known as neonatal withdrawal syndrome. Bondi recently held the first meeting of the statewide task force on prescription drug abuse in newborns. She says she's already found the problem is not only in Florida, but other parts of the country as well.
East Tennessee Children's Hospital in Knoxville. One day they decided just to do a snapshot of the babies who had this issue. And on one day, 68% of the babies in their NICU were there simply because they were born addicted to prescription drugs.
And Mindy Young, a registered nurse at St. Joseph's Women's Hospital in Tampa, shared a similar story. At her hospital, the doctors and nurses realized a woman was in labor who was taking prescription drugs for her pain. They then found her unborn baby was addicted to oxycodone after he exhibited strange behavior when he was born.
Michael wouldn't eat. He rubbed his skin until it was raw. He had terrible diarrhea that got worse. And then there were his shrill cries piercing through the unit. The gentle rocking that comforts most babies only makes Michael more agitated. They weren't the cries of a normal newborn. These were the cries of a baby who couldn't tolerate movement, light, or stimulation.
Young says they have no idea what effects might linger as Michael grows up. Young says she hopes Bondi's task force will go a long way in educating expectant mothers to avoid going down the same path as Michael. Bondi says her task force is expected to break into individual work groups to look at how to address the epidemic and should meet back up together after June. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we look at disputes at two Florida State universities drawing lots of attention this week.
And what's our answer? Stop the cuts! Spend the reserves! Stop the cuts! Spend the reserves!
Officials say new lottery vending machines will increase funds for education, but some say not enough of that money is going to the classrooms.
We are going to have to put more of the lottery dollars directly into the public schools and give the public schools some flexibility with those dollars.
And Florida's former space laboratories hope aerospace companies will bring them lots of basic research business.
You can really do it on the cheap compared to how a company would operate, and we don't have a specific project oftentimes that we have to charge this against.
It's been a rough week for a couple of Florida's public universities. Lynn Hatter reports fights over budget cuts and the future of a 12th state university have grabbed headlines around the state and the nation.
University of Florida administrators are trying to cut about $40 million out of the school's budget. Much of the focus has been on its computer information sciences program. Students and faculty have been voicing their opinions on the issue loudly.
And what's our answer? Stop the cuts! Spend the reserves! Stop the cuts! Spend the reserves!
Supporters of the program have been lobbying for weeks on the issue. They started an online petition which even hit Forbes magazine. Computer science is what's called a STEM degree, a discipline heavily based in math and technology.
And I'm scared, you know. I've been here for 4 years. I want to finish my degree. I want to finish my research.
Jason Chi is working on a doctorate in computer science. He says the university's restructuring plan could result in him having to leave the United States. He's an international student, and part of his ability to stay in the country and get his degree depends on having a job, many which are supplied in the university's research programs. But the possible loss of those job positions under the university's restructuring plan has him worried he could lose his visa and have to leave with no degree.
I don't want to just leave and then without, you know, doing a good research. I want to, do something good and then get a degree, get out of here.
University President Bernie Matchin released a statement trying to ease the concerns. Matchin says the computer sciences program won't be eliminated, but rather merged with another program. The dust-up at UF made national news and even caught Governor Rick Scott's attention. The cuts come at a time when lawmakers shaved $300 million out of university budgets. And Scott has been pushing the universities to do more to produce STEM degrees, not less. When questioned on UF's decision, the governor said,
"My understanding of that is that was just the way they were saving the money because they were doing the right thing, and that's they're having the professors teach more classes. The savings was with teaching assistants."
While UF works through its budget issues, the University of South Florida's Polytechnic campus is set to become the state's 12th university. An investigation by the school into USF Polytech's former leaders reveal a climate of financial mismanagement and employee intimidation. The report recommends further investigation into Marshall Goodman, the man who helped craft the school's independence bid. Governor Rick Scott signed off on the campus's independence, and this week, before news of the investigation broke, he told reporters why he thought it was a good decision to create another institution at a time when the current 11 have all had their budgets cut.
Well, I signed that bill because, as you know, I believe in STEM degrees. I believe that there's a big need and a big opportunity for our state to continue to grow. And I believe that long-term it's going to pay off in jobs. I think it's going to be very successful.
The new Polytech University will keep all of USF Polytech's financial assets, but it has no physical building of its own, no students, and no accreditation. Still, the school's biggest champion, State Senator J.D. Alexander, says he's not too worried about its future.
We need to make sure when we provide an education to a student, that's really something that's going to result in a job. This institution will do that, I believe, at a very high percentage time in field and allow those students to really move forward and expand our economy. We don't see that across many of the programs that are in universities. So we need to take a hard look at what we're doing, make some tough choices, and move in the right direction.
Florida Polytechnic University is set to become the state's 12th state university on July 1st. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
And this just in, Governor Rick Scott has vetoed a bill that would have allowed Florida State University and the University of Florida to raise their tuition above the state's 15% a year cap. The two schools would have had to get those higher rates approved by the Florida Board of Governors. Both universities had pushed for the extra tuition authority, saying it was needed to finance expensive degree programs like those in science, technology, engineering, and math, areas where Governor Rick Scott and other state officials have said they want the schools to focus on. You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. Florida lottery officials say they're getting ready to roll out hundreds of new full-service lottery vending machines that will offer not just scratch-off tickets, but other games like Powerball. The idea is that they'll help increase sales and raise more money for education. But Regan McCarthy reports there are a few groups asking questions like how much of that money will make it into the state's classrooms.
A new measure signed by the governor makes full-service lottery vending machines legal in the state. Previously, only instant ticket vending machines, or vending machines that dispense scratch-off tickets, were allowed. Now the new full-service machines are an answer to the governor's call to increase lottery ticket sales, and with it, revenue for education. Florida Lottery Deputy Secretary Dennis Harmon says that's because the lottery expects new retailers, especially big box stores, to want the machines.
There are some corporate locations that have told us that they are interested in selling a lottery product. They know that lottery games bring people into their stores, but because they have concerns about labor costs and inventory control and so forth, they are more interested in the full-service machines.
Estimators expect the machines to raise about $8 million for education in the first partial year. That's out of an expected total sales of $27 million. They're expecting about $21 million for education in the year after that. Lottery Secretary Cynthia O'Connell says the money will go directly to fund education.
We are a majority funder of Bright Future Scholarships, as you know. It's determined by the Department of Education, of course, where it goes. But in the past, we've funded school construction. We funded K-12 programs.
That sounds like a good deal for the state's school systems. But some say the way that money's doled out should be reorganized. Wayne Blanton is the executive director of the Florida School Board Association. Blanton says he's glad to hear it anytime someone suggests increasing revenue for schools, but he says people should understand that only a small part of the money from the lottery is making it into the state's classrooms.
we appreciate the lottery money. I think it's very beneficial to public schools. But on the other hand, I think we are going to have to put more of the lottery dollars directly into the public schools and give the public schools some flexibility with those dollars. Remember, it takes about $100 million a day to run the public schools in the state of Florida. So if we're only getting about $150 million of what I call truly flexible dollars, then that's really, in the big picture, not that much money statewide.
Blanton says what the schools really need is a new formula for distributing the revenue they have. Blanton isn't the only person raising concerns. Spokesman for the Florida Council on Compulsive Gambling, Brian Konzvik, says his organization has a few questions about the new machines, like how well the mechanism intended to stop underage play works. State law stipulates the machines must be within the sight of cashiers and that cashiers must have a kill switch to shut the machine down when someone underage tries to use the machine. Lottery officials say that's the method in place for the machines in use now, and that will be the method in place for the new full-service machines. So far, they say, it's worked well. But Konzvik says he has some doubts.
I can just speak from going into a store that I frequent. I can see that it is, you know, there's no doubt about it, it is within line of sight, but it's also 40 or 50 feet away from the counter. So mm-hmm. What happens when the person at the counter is busy ringing up a customer or, you know, doing whatever, dealing with a phone call?
Konzvik says his organization is also concerned because the new machines offer what Lottery Secretary O'Connell describes as a convenient personal experience. Konzvik says that could further problems for people with gambling addictions.
Let's take an individual who is addicted to lottery. Maybe they go to the counter and they have a problem with gambling. They're not just going to buy one scratch-off ticket or one lotto ticket. They're going to buy $100, $200 worth of tickets to feed their addiction. Well, now they don't have to be embarrassed about doing that. They can protect their gambling addiction. They can hide their gambling problem by utilizing these vending machines.
O'Connell says compulsive behavior will continue happening with or without the new machines, but adds the lottery does what it can to encourage responsible play. The new full-service machines are expected to hit stores within the next 6 months. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Finally, for half a century, Florida was the center of gravity for America's space program. Now that program is essentially on hold. Tom Flanagan reports the push is now on to redirect all the Florida resources once dedicated to the manned space effort to more earthbound uses.
Today, former Florida Lieutenant Governor Frank Brogan is chancellor of the state university system. But he vividly recalls something that fired his imagination when he was a little boy.
A little boy who grew up as a product of Sputnik and then our subsequent race to space, who marveled with his classmates watching black and white television as Neil Armstrong planted the first human footprint on the moon.
Lift off. The MA-6 vehicle has lifted off.
Which is why the grown-up Frank Brogan was nearly broken-hearted by something he saw just weeks ago.
That space shuttle Discovery on the back of that 747 being transported to a museum as its final resting place.
For Brogan and the thousands of Floridians who have been connected to the U.S. Humans in Space effort over the years, it was the end of an era. But that program, Brogan says, wasn't just about launching rockets into the final frontier.
And it isn't just about what we're going to find in the far reaches of space. It's also about how what we find will translate back to what we need on planet Earth such that everyone can live a better quality of life.
Indeed, so much of today's taken-for-granted technology is a direct spin-off from the U.S. space program, from our ever-shrinking computers and cell phones to our GPS devices, new fabrics, and miracle drugs, just to name a few everyday offshoots. The big question is, can the accelerated research and development that produced those kinds of things because there was a vibrant space program continue now that the space program has geared way down? A confident yes comes from NASA researcher Faye Collier. He says today's National Aeronautics and Space Administration is as involved in aeronautics as it is in space.
Well, this is one of the most exciting projects at NASA right now, and we're working to mitigate environmental impacts of aviation. So we're working fuel burn, reducing fuel burn reduces carbon footprints. We're working noise footprints, so trying to reduce community noise. And all this has to do with improving the subsonic transportation fleet.
NASA also has a powerful partner in Florida to help with the basic nuts and bolts of that effort. It's the Florida Center for Advanced Aeropropulsion. That's a coalition of four institutes of higher learning, the University of Florida, Florida State University, the University of Central Florida, and Embry-Riddle University. FSU Vice President of Research Dr. Kirby Kemper says that forms a whole much bigger than the sum of its parts.
And it's through the universities and working with industry that I believe that we have the obligation as well as the opportunity to move us forward.
That forward movement is now likely to be faster with the opening of the center's new aeropropulsion mechatronics energy lab in Tallahassee. Some of its cutting-edge projects are robots that run and climb.
So this and its two-legged predecessor are the world's fastest-legged climbing robots in the world.
There are advanced experiments, many of them noisy, on ways to quiet commercial jet engines.
So it's very loud, and it produces very strong supersonic microjets that we can use in these high-speed flow facilities.
The center's assistant scientist, Jonas Gustafson, says his facility specializes in the kind of basic research the big aerospace companies seldom do anymore.
That's just not feasible for a lot more of more cutting-edge type of research. They can only do production stuff where they know that this is going to work. We're just going to need to tweak it a little bit. So this is more for pilot research and for these more experimental designs.
Gustafson says the hope is that the Pratt & Whitney's and Lockheed Martin's of the world will contract with facilities like his and NASA's to help design the aircraft and other advanced technology of tomorrow. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Kordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And the Fresh from Florida program, supporting Florida's economy by promoting agricultural products grown right here at home, including a variety of seafood harvested by commercial fishermen along Florida's Gulf Coast, on the web at freshfromflorida.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee, and other Florida public radio stations. This is the Florida Public Radio Network.